Good afternoon and welcome to another fabulous podcast episode of How Bette Davis Saved My Life, Life Lessons from Classic Hollywood. I am here with none other than Miss Georgia, and I am Moya, and we are so excited to be here with you. Every time we're with you, audience, we really enjoy ourselves. I hope you enjoy us enjoying ourselves. Do not forget to look us up on Facebook, How Bette Davis Saved My Life. Please like when you're on our platforms, whether you listen to us on Spotify, iHeart, Apple, or Google. Please subscribe if you listen to us on Castos. Please subscribe and like our content. And don't forget, again, on Facebook, that's how you can communicate with us about our show. And we always appreciate any comments that you have. So today we're going to take a slight turn. This is our first venture into war, the military. Dun, 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 dun. That was supposed to be a bugle blow, but that was very bad. Georgia, what's our movie for today?
Our movie today is Paths of Glory, made in 1957.
Oh my gosh. Well, Georgia, okay, so like we said, this is a total departure from most of our stuff. But we wanna, you know, we wanna have a diverse library for all of our listeners. So And so this is Paths of Glory. It's a military movie, and someone on this podcast was in the military, and it's not me. So can you guess who it is, audience? Miss Georgia.
It's the guiltiest charge.
Miss Georgia, before we get into the movie, which branch of the military were you in?
I was in the Army. Okay. And for those of you who want to know what my specialty was, I was what they call a 36 Alpha. I was a counterintelligence officer.
Oh my gosh.
My branch was military intelligence.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. We're the ones that try to prevent any acts of espionage and sabotage against the United States. And so, was there some spy training in there?
Maybe. Yeah.
I'll never stop.
And when, you know,
I tell you what, then I'd have to kill you.
Right.
No.
And you, hopefully in the new year, you know, George and I are planning to do some visual presentations. Now, what that looks like, God only knows, but Georgia, a beautiful spy. So if she could have been a Bond girl easily, I could see you slinking up with the high cut slit maxi dress with your boobs, all your cleavages hanging out. Then you pull your face off. Please pull your face off, because that's what everybody wants from Mission Impossible. You know, that's what we all envision, because that's all we know, like James Bond, Mission Impossible. But Georgia, that is totally cool, girl. So what was your rank?
I started out, I was commissioned as a second lieutenant, and then was promoted to first lieutenant. And then when I left and was in the reserves, then I was promoted to captain.
Oh, wow.
That was my last rank. I was a captain.
How long were you in there for?
4 years active and 2 years reserve.
Okay.
And I came in at the most wonderful time way, because they had just opened up the ROTC program to women.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to get a scholarship. And so what I did was, I was one of only 8 women in the entire United States.
What?
But there was only 8 scholarships given out to women that first year, only 8. And I was lucky enough to bag one of them.
Oh my gosh.
I was only one of 8 women in the U.S. to do it. So I, yes.
You
so
made history. That was historical.
Well, and I was also the first woman to be commissioned through ROTC in San Antonio at Trinity University. And
wow.
The commencement speaker at my commissioning ceremony was none other than George Herbert Walker Bush, who was then the head of the CIA
right.
And later to become president of the United States. And so,
wow.
So 76 was a pretty good year,
yeah.
You know, for me to join the military. And so, my glory, that's how my glorious career began.
And that's so funny. She said, She said glorious, and that kind of plays into Paths of Glory, which this movie was kind of, that's ironic, okay? That's an ironic term.
It is. The title is seems to be like a mockery. It's just wrong and kind of a cynical title. But we're going to leave that to y'all for later. We're going to let you judge after you see the movie and then reflect on the meaning of the title.
Right. So this movie is in 1957 and post-Korean War, if I'm not mistaken. Vietnam, we all know, is right around the corner. And so in my notes, I am surprised this movie got made, because it's safe to say it is an anti-war movie. And I'm surprised this movie got made, because even though, America had just been in the Korean War skirmish, so you would think America would be, and obviously it's after World War II, like a decade and some years after World War II. So you think, I don't know, Georgia, what do you think? I'm surprised it got made, and I was saying because it didn't get nominated for any Oscars. And I was thinking, because it was anti-war, and I said maybe on one hand, people revered America for being this great military power and successful, quote unquote, some people may disagree or agree, whatever, but we were and still are a great military power. So if you made something anti-war, even though this is set, guys, in World War I, maybe it wasn't very popular. I could not find any box office on this. So I don't even know if it made, I know it cost per me $1 million to make, 900 and some thousand dollars. I could not find box office. I saw a worldwide gross of like $5,000, which is insane. But if anybody knows the gross, the true gross for Paths of Glory, please let us know on our Facebook page, How Betty Davis Saved My Life, because I would love to know if this was successful. Won a bunch of international awards, but not, I don't know how well it was received here in America. Do you know anything about that?
As a matter of fact, I do. It had very poor box office returns.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually a passion project of Kirk Douglas's. I think made a deal. He was going to do some other things, but he said, I really want to make this movie. And of the 900 and something, a little bit less than $1 million, he himself took salary a third of that.
Oh, really?
So the movie was made on a very small budget. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was filmed in Germany. And also, this was a movie that Stanley Kubrick wanted to do very, very badly. And mm-hmm. In addition to this movie, he did two other anti-war movies.
Right. Strange Love can't remember the other one, but Dr. Strangelove and everybody knows from Dr. Strangelove and A Clockwork Orange and The Shining. I don't know about you. Were you a Kubrick? I don't really think about him. Not that I'm against him, but I don't really, I don't think about directors. I just think about the movies. But were you a fan of Kubrick's, any of his films or anything?
To be perfectly honest, he didn't really register with me that much, because I saw Dr. Strangelove and I didn't really care for it.
I have never seen it.
However, I have to say, this movie, in a way, it is a masterpiece, because it's brilliantly
directed. It's brilliant.
It's not just the camera angles and the way he tells so much, even when there's no dialogue.
Right.
He does an extreme, from a movie-making perspective, he does an amazing job with this movie.
You're in the movie. The way he shot it, are in the trenches. You are at the court martials. And we promise, guys, we're not going to spoil anything. We promise. But you are there. You are not in the theater or at your home. You are in there with these people.
Yeah, it was brilliantly done. Mm-hmm. I have to give him props for that. In some ways, I'm going to say, going out on a limb here, not having seen a whole lot of those other movies, of the ones I've seen, this is by far the best one.
Okay.
I think it is. But there's such a powerful message in it, and no mistaking it. And so regardless of whether you're a veteran or not, just go ahead and take a look at it, because it will stir things up in you, especially if you come from a military family or if you've had military service yourself, you will feel things in this from this movie.
Right. And I think we did Oxbow Incident. I'm sorry, I don't remember what episode it was, a couple of episodes back. But to me, it was like Oxbow. So you hadn't seen it. I had seen it. You, and then Georgia texted me after she saw it, and her text was so funny because I kept saying, Georgia, be careful. Please watch this when you're in a good mood because it will bring you down, down, down. Especially you've been in the military and like you're going to just want to punch somebody in the face after you look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Georgia sent me these bitmojis with her like with a gut punch. You said you had to polish off a thing of cookie dough after you looked at it.
I did. I ate my white and raw cookie dough because I was so...
It's one of those movies.
I was so outraged.
Furious.
I was furious. I was like, as I saw that movie. And it just... I thought, oh my God. Yeah, so...
We're warning you. We're warning you. Look at it when you're in a damn good mood and you're not angry. You settle all your beefs because it will take you there. The movie is like, 60-something years old or something like that. And I mean, it's just happening. You know, it's raw. It is so raw.
Yeah.
Brilliant acting and everything. So what can you tell us about some of the background?
Oh, yeah. There's actually a lot to this movie. Okay, now, the thing about this movie is that, well, first of all, it was banned in France.
Yes, it sure was.
Because they felt that it was an insult to their, not only their judicial system and the army.
Right.
And so it was also banned in Switzerland, Spain, Sweden, and Israel, and it was not shown on American military bases.
I said, can you blame them? Right.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine what it would have done to morale to see something like
and this
that?
Was a true this was based on a true story, guys. This actually happened. This is based on a true story that happened during World War.
Loosely.
Right.
And then I have to say, it's some things that you're going to notice when you see the movie. Now, I think that Kirk Douglas was very well cast.
Yeah.
However, there were some other people who were considered for the role.
Oh, really?
Richard Burton and James Mason and Gregory Peck were also considered for the role of Colonel Dax. Okay, you notice that General Mirabeau, he's got that huge scar. That was a real facial scar. It was the result of a car accident.
Yeah, George McCready, yeah.
And now, when they were filming, before filming, and they were trying to recreate the World War One battlefield, it took them 3 weeks, and they used explosives, and they dug craters, and they tried, and they set a barbed wire there in Germany to, like, really give you a sense of what that horrific...
Right.
That landscape, and then also there is a scene at the end of the movie, and it takes place in a little, I guess you could call it, tavern, and the soldiers are in there, and there is a woman. She's the only woman that she'll see in the movie. That woman later married Stanley Kubrick, and she became his third wife.
Oh,
so just keep that in mind when you see this scene with the woman there. You know, it'll also make you have some feelings when you see that.
Yeah.
That scene.
Okay. I saw her name as Kubrick, but I thought it was his sister or something like that. But okay, yeah.
Yeah, I thought so too. And then when I, you know, did a little bit of reading up on it, I thought that she later went on to marry him. So,
okay.
Yeah. And also looked at the lyrics to the song that was being sung, and that was, you know, because the men, even though they didn't know the words of the song, they were humming. This is a folk song about a man that goes off to war and he leaves his sweetheart behind.
Okay.
And she gets very, very ill and he goes back to see her. And it's just a very little song.
This movie does not let up. at any damn point. Kubrick.
I could not have said it better.
He is not going to waste one inch of film on kicking your behind or making you want to get some, take some antidepressant. Because, you know, some movies are let up and, oh, I can breathe, I can exhale. No. And George and I are on purpose. We are not giving you any details because we don't want to prejudice you, especially if you're if you were or are in the military and you see this, you know, because you can, amazingly to me, some people, you can take sides. You can take the leadership side, the upper leadership side of the generals and the corporal. You could take their side and say, hey, you know, hey, this is just how it is in the military. Or you can take Kirk Douglas's side and, you know, whatever. So I don't, you know, I don't want to be disrespectful of that. But so, Georgia, you and I, when we were preparing for this, we were saying, yes, this is in a military backdrop, the story, but political struggles, poor leadership, and cowardice, that transcends the military. You know, I had Georgia laugh, and I said, you could have that foolishness working at Starbucks or at McDonald's. I'm crew chief. I'm chief fries, and no, I'm supposed to be flipping the hamburger. You know, it does not matter. You know, when you have those four things I just listed happening, it's a recipe for disaster, and someone will die. Someone will die.
Well, I have to agree. First of all, going back to what you said, yes, this movie is very uncompromising. Okay, so it does not let up.
Right.
But when you're talking about leadership, that's one of the things, that's especially if you're an officer, and also you feel it too when you're an enlisted person.
Okay.
You know, I like to think that you know, because you're asking people to do some things that are very difficult.
Right.
And when you have a strong leader, they lead by not only their personality, but the trust that you place in them and their judgment. And that you have, you know, some of the best people that I thought were the really good leaders, they're the ones you get a sense they're looking out for their people.
Right.
They have their best interest. Mm-hmm. First and foremost, it's like you take care of them, they will take care of you.
Yeah, right, right.
And so by sheer force of your personality, sometimes people will follow you.
Right.
Because they believe in the cause and the mission and what you're doing.
Right.
And also, but the thing is like when it comes right down to it, those people in those trenches, Moya, they weren't thinking at the time about God and country. It was sheer survival. They're fighting for their buddy next to them.
Right.
You know, that's why the military trains you together as a unit.
Yes.
Because you fight with each other and for each other.
Right.
That's how the military acclimates you.
Right.
For your buddies and with your buddies, and you develop that bond.
Right.
So like anybody who is a veteran and you find out there's another veteran, you feel this instant bond or kinship with them because they know, they understand, they know what it's like, they know the price you pay, they know what it means. Because, I mean, how many other professions are there when you can be called upon to give up your life?
Right.
And, you know, we all know that. We don't talk about it. We all know that. I mean, but, you know, we're reminded of it. You know, the dog tags we wear, you know, and before, you know, you go and deploy and you go through these exercises every year, you know, they update in the military, you know, we update our wills, and you know, we all, you know, we do, I mean, that's in the back of your mind.
Right.
You don't think about it, but you know, and they make sure that your dependents, if they're, you know, when you leave them behind, that there's a plan in place for them to be taken care of, you know, and of course you have the life insurance on it. So at a very, very young age, all of us have to face that mortality issue.
Right.
And so we you know, we kind of sometimes have terrible senses of humor about the whole thing, you know, we joke about it, but you know, that's one of the things that I felt like, even though I served during peacetime, if I had been called up, you know, if I had to go to the Middle East or wherever, I would have gone without hesitation. Everybody I know who served with me felt the same way. We all would have gone. We, you know, that was important to us. And, but at the same time, Moya, I can feel for some of the people, especially the kind of warfare in World War One.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most.
Oh, it was horrible.
It was hell on earth. It was horrible.
Yeah. It was just raw, no protection, the gassing. So, you know, the gas is what did a lot of people, most of the damage, you know. I can't even imagine. So when you see Kirk, and I'm glad you brought that up because, and I know you had to feel something, even though it was reenactments in the movie. But when let me just be honest, I saw this movie a long time ago. And one of the images that stuck out to me, I was like, so you see Kirk Douglas with the damn whistle blowing, no kind of, you know, not the kind of stuff the military has to do, all these protections and da 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 da. When you see Kirk Douglas, but especially Kirk Douglas, this image, with just a whistle and a baton or whatever, just running out. And I'm like, did they seriously go out with just a whistle and their will? These people are out of their minds. What kind of madness is this? And people just dropping dead all around. I mean, look, thank you for your service and everybody who's doing it now and who will and who has, because you know what kind of guts that takes? That's y'all crazy. Look, I'm gonna be Melissa. Let me ask you this: is there some part of you that is either crazy before you go in the military or when you come out? Because Georgia, y'all, that's insane. I'm sorry to mere mortals like myself. That is insane to me. I don't know how y'all do it.
Well, I'll tell you something. You know how they say that there's no atheist
in a foxhole? Yeah.
I had the privilege of speaking to a World War II veteran who was President D-Day.
Oh, wow.
The man was a hero. When I think of what he did, I am in awe.
I am in awe.
Have you ever seen Saving Private Ryan?
Oh, God. Yeah, I've seen pieces of it. And whenever I see the footage of them storming Normandy, the beaches, I'm like, it's surreal. I cannot believe these people did this.
Because they felt they were afraid. But you know what? They, even with all that fear, they knew they had to do it.
Yeah.
They didn't know if they were going to be alive.
Right.
Like the very next minute.
Right.
They still kept going. Which I am just in total awe of that.
Yes.
Because,
yes.
Listen, if that was me and I thought about that.
Girl, please.
I would have just like.
I'd have played dead. I'd have played dead. I would have stood on the boat that took you. I'd have like act like the bullet hit me on the boat and just laid there. There's no damn way I'd have went. I'm a coward. There's no way I'd have got off that damn thing. And like the people in the front. I'm like, so you gotta be the guys in the front. How the hell did they say who goes to the front of the boat? Talking about when they stormed Normandy. How did you get that position? Because, girl, I'd have been under the bus. I'll push it. I'll help push it on the beach. I'm like, I'm not getting in the boat. I'm damn sure not getting in the front of the boat.
Especially when you see the person next to you.
Yeah,
in front of you.
Just their brains just gone. They're just all over you. Yeah, they just drop dead.
And you keep going, even though you see that.
Georgia, that's... answer the question. Is there some mental, I don't want to say trick, but is there some psychosis involved? Or is it that the adrenaline is pumping and you don't think about it? I mean, you know, what do you have to tell, even though you didn't see any action, but you, like you said, look, death is looming over you. So is there something you just tell yourself or you don't think about it? I mean, what is it?
Wow, that's an excellent question, Moya. But you know, I think it's, probably each individual person has to answer that for themselves.
Okay.
But I think, yes, you kind of nailed it in a way, because there's a lot of adrenaline going,
mm-hmm.
and there's like the fog and confusion of war.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I think your survival instinct is so strong, it kicks in.
Wow.
And so you do whatever it takes to make it through those few immediate seconds. You just do what it takes. That's what you're thinking about.
Okay.
I have an ancestor who was, I think, a miracle. And the reason that I'm here today is because he survived something on the battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
This was during the Civil War. and he was from Texas, but he was serving in an Alabama regiment.
Mm-hmm.
And you've heard of the term decimated. Nine out of ten men in his unit were slaughtered. And mm-hmm. I went and I visited that battlefield to see what it was like
and
what he had to endure.
Yes, crazy.
And when I saw it, when I visited it, I thought, I saw how the Union troops were firing down on them.
Yeah.
It was like shooting fifth
barrel. Wow.
And how he survived it, I'll never know. And he went on after that to fight at Lookout Mountain, Chattanooga, and then he fought at the Battle of Atlanta where he was wounded.
Mm.
And so after he was wounded, they took away his firearm and his horse, and he ended up walking all the way back home.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy. Wow.
He had to survive and live off the land and everything. And so what I think about what people do and the horrors of war.
Right.
And see, the thing is, you know, the thing that I loved about the Colonel Dax character played by Kirk Douglas was that he led his men. He was out there in front. That's what
But the other generals
in this movie, they were back in this gorgeous, luxurious chateau.
Yes.
Thinking, well, we'll probably lose 55% of our men.
Oh my gosh.
Do it anyway.
Right.
Let's go ahead and do this.
Right.
I don't think I'm giving away too much, but the thing is you've got people who, they're giving orders and they're not experiencing the ravages and the horror of war.
I said the same thing. Yes.
And, yeah. So, for them, you know,
it's like playing men on the, like, you know, people play that those games where they just move the pieces around. I mean, gee whiz, that's crazy. And these are people, you know. Wow.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. And so I don't consider myself a hero. I think the people who are the real heroes are the ones who experience such things that was so horrible they can't get them out of their minds. The things we ask our people to do in the face of our country.
Right.
The ones that suffer the PTSD.
Yes.
That saw such horrific things.
Yeah, they had a guy who was shell shocked, what he called a shell shock back then. And that was a sight to see. This movie, girl, it was a lot. Oh my gosh. We want you to look at it because it is an excellent movie. Most critics have it on their best of list. But, it's a lot. But it's really good, though. It's really good.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that make you think, and I think that's, I'm sure, why TCM made it an essential. I didn't realize that it was.
Okay.
It got so many reviews. But, the thing is I like for people to look at all sides of this.
Yes.
To see.
Yes.
How it was for things like blame when the mission doesn't go right.
Yes,
you know, about scapegoating.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of different little elements to this movie.
The politics of it all.
Yeah, yes. And like Moya said, you don't have to be in the military. I mean, it's your office. It's just all kinds of things. It's leadership, politics, all kinds of things. You know, what people do to get ahead. When you don't curry favor or don't kiss up to somebody. it makes you think about all these things.
And that was just so many fine performances, and we're kind of running out of time here, but of course, Kirk Douglas. Adolf Monju, for those of you who are true classic movie fans, this guy was in a silent era. This guy will have steady work all the way probably to the end of his career. And just to see him evolve. And this probably was one of his best characters. He was a total SOB. George MacReady, who played Miro. He always plays a baddie, but it just plays a really, really, really well. Just a cold-blooded snake. And then happened to be an idiot at the same time. So he deserved an Oscar. He did the balance of being an idiot and a jackass and a coward was just perfect. Timothy Carey, he has a cult following. He made a cult classic, The World's Greatest Sinner. I'm not saying it right. But so just really fun. Even Wayne Morris, who usually plays a goof, in a lot of movies, in my opinion. Just excellent. It's probably one of his better performances. And so it is a perfect movie. And I'm pretty sure there was politics involved for this not getting any Oscar nominations, because it was, and not getting any, making any money. But I mean, it's just as good as any other damn movie, military movie. And I hate military movies. And George was like, well, I love them. And I was like, well, I only saw a couple of them. And then I mentioned Paths of Glory. And that's how we looked at it. But this is, because it's not really about war, you know, it's, and that's why I like it. It's more about the politics.
I like Sergeant York and Heartbreak Ridge. And,
okay, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Something kind of, you admire the people and there's something uplifting about it. But I want to say this. You know, somebody once asked me, what is the most important lesson that you learned from your military service? And I'll tell you one thing that it really did for me that I use to this day. It taught me that I have reserves of strength within me that I never knew I had.
Oh,
you can
wow.
dig deep and you can. You can do things when things that you didn't think that you would have the determination or the guts to do.
Wow.
You can do them. That's one of the things that the military did for me. I think that's the greatest lesson that it's done. It's given me that special kind of perseverance and mm-hmm. the belief in myself.
Wow.
You know. I think that's true for a lot of people who served in the military.
Yeah.
It does that for you.
Yeah, my family, we have a very strong military background from World War II all the way to like Vietnam, maybe not wartime, but I mean just as early as the 2000s, early 2000s and stuff. So and again, thank you for everybody who's listening, who has served and is serving and who will serve. America would not be great and what she is without you. I don't care what anybody says. You are a major part of what makes America great and strong. And then again, Georgia, thank you and everybody else who's listening. we're about to close. And you probably say, well, you didn't tell us anything about the movie. We told you, we're not going to tell you what happened. We want you to look at it. And hit us up online on our Facebook page, How Bette Davis Saved My Life, because we don't want to prejudice you. George and I really try hard not to spoil the movie and prejudice you, because we want to draw your own conclusions, especially with these type of movies, because there are so many sides. You think there's just one side, but like you said, Georgia, especially if you've been in the military and you've been in leadership, you may side with the higher ups. You know, I can see that. I mean, it may not be necessarily what I would think. But I could understand that, you know, because when you're a leader in any leadership role, you have to make the hard decisions. But I totally agree with you, Georgia. If you have people under you, you gotta be for your people. You gotta put your people. The plan will not work. I don't care what it is, unless you are for your people. You're supporting your people. I don't care what it is. It's just not going to work. Georgia, I'm gonna leave you with the last word, if there is any. Speak now, forever hold your peace.
Okay, I just want to say, Moya, I thought you ended that beautifully. I thought that the thanks to our military and veterans was something that is a cause very near and dear to me. Yes, I want to thank all the people out there who may be listening who've served our country, because, you know, everything that we have that we enjoy right now, this country's been so good to me. And
that's
to all
right.
Of us.
Yes.
We have
yes.
It, all of
Amen.
You.
Amen.
I decided to put on the uniform and say, I'm going to stand with you and I'm going to protect you and defend you.
Right. Thank you guys for tuning in to another How Bette Davis Saved My Life. Don't forget we're on Facebook of the same name, How Bette Davis Saved My Life. Life lessons from Hollywood. And you know, you learned a life lesson today. Is that you gotta be, if you're in leadership, you gotta be for your people. You have to do it. Thank you guys, and we will see you next time with another fabulous classic movie. And Chaka Khan, take us on out for How Bette Davis Saved My Life. I'm Moya, and this is Georgia, and we will see you guys next time.